Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Belling, and today I'm delighted to be joined by the brilliant YA author, editor, and writing coach, Susie Vidori. Susie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Richie. It's so great to be here.
Oh, thank you very much for joining me. It's great to have you here, number one. And we had a really great chat last week, didn't we, number two, on your own podcast.
We did. You're going to be on my podcast as well. I love, love. My audience is going to love your take on fantasy writing. So it's fun to be here too.
Oh, well, listeners will soon discover that we are, we both love chatting about writing when nerds for. I think that's fair to say.
Definitely.
Anyway. Why not do it again? But I think with your skills and expertise as a writing coach, and obviously a very talented and widely read author, there's always lots to learn. So I always like to begin at the beginning. I think that's, some people like to dive in media res, but I think I like to see people's journeys. So do you mind telling us about your how you got into writing and what your journey through the writing world has been like?
Absolutely. I love the in media res reference there. I'm with my people and we can throw those things out there. How did I get started out as a writer? I just always knew I was going to write a book. And when I talk to people, they often say something similar when you feel called to write a book, that you just always knew that you were a writer and you might not have the skills to do it at the time. But it was just one of those things that I always knew that I would be a writer. And I wrote a lot of half books as a teenager, which means, I mean, I moved a lot. This is before the internet, before the cloud. So I lost a notebook, or I had a computer that caught fire. That's a story I love to tell when I tour in schools. And so you lose them. But as an adult, I was just like, I'm going to write a book one day. I didn't know what it was going to be honest. And I was grappling with that because I was a business executive and, you know, people worry about this. And I never laugh at anybody who thinks, oh, goodness, what's going to happen when I hit it big time and it doesn't work out with my other persona? You know, very few of us ever have to worry about that. But that's what you think. Right. And so I was like, well, I don't want to write something racy because, like, it doesn't fit. And I have kids and all the things. Right. And I don't want to do something too controversial. I don't want to do something, you know, like, I just had all these negative thoughts around what I didn't want to do. And then at some point, YA became really big and I could see that I could write something for a wide audience. I could write something with really relevant human ideas that I wanted to portray. And I could still keep my job as an executive. Now, that didn't last long. Because writing took over, and it's not something that happens for everybody. And it wasn't something that I planned. I thought I was going to write books on the side. And then it kind of became my life and my job and where I was comfortable and where I was, you know, thriving. And I like to say, writing a book, you don't know what's going to happen. If you'd have told me a decade ago that I was going to be a book coach and be on podcasts talking, and this would be my job, I would have thought you were nuts. Like, I was a business executive. That was my identity. And so it was a really interesting path, but it's going to open doors. Those of you who are just starting out, you're writing your books is going to open doors. You don't know what they're going to be. You can't control it, but it will change your life. It will change your path.
Yeah. It's like a battle for how long you can resist.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so I just think...
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a battle for how long you can resist and how closely your author persona matches your real humanity or your real self. I think as a business executive, I was great at my job. I made a lot of money for the companies that I worked with, and just at some level, I was always sort of working for somebody else and doing somebody else's dream. And writing is a whole different thing. It's a whole different level of being a human. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. Like, we do spend a lot of our time making other people rich, and it is a brilliant thing because writing is all for you. Well, it's for the
Yeah.
reader as well, but.
It's for the readers. And in this case, I also help other writers. As a book coach, I help an editor, I help other writers as well figure out their potential as a writer, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, what made you sort of lean into YA? What is it about young adult fiction that sort of draws you towards it?
Love the pace. It's fast paced. But also at the time, I really wanted to write, and I didn't necessarily want to only write YA fiction, but I wanted to write something that my kids could read. I wrote The Fountain, my first book, the first draft, on maternity leave with my third child, and she's 14 now. They're kind of past that sort of tween and middle grade, and my oldest is 19. It doesn't read that much anymore at all because she's off at university and doesn't have time. But yeah, really just I wanted to write something that was all encompassing that I could do in my spare time. And fantasy, I mean, really my favorite, I think we had this discussion last week as well, but my favorite genres to read are historical fiction, but I don't enjoy doing the research. And when I write, I don't want to be encumbered by all the work that comes with that because I have such a busy other sort of part of my brain that works on other things. And so fantasy is amazing because I get to make it all up and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, right?
Definitely, yeah. That's one of the best things. You've always got that get out of jail free card if you ever need it.
Exactly. Get out of jail free card where, magic can solve it. Magic can, you can always introduce new levels of it, or your magic can change. I could talk about magic systems all day long. Sometimes I do.
Yeah. I suppose for YA, it's one of the big appeals, I imagine. Is that one of the key sort of elements that you need in a YA book?
Well, I mean, not necessarily, like, you don't need to have fantasy. There's definitely contemporary YA. And actually, in 2020, YA was a little bit slow. Like, YA fantasy was a little bit slow because they purchased a lot. The publishing had purchased, traditional publishing had purchased a lot. And so my agent was saying, hey, let's do something contemporary just for now. And so I wrote this. I think I shared this story with you before, but I wrote this contemporary novel, and then all of a sudden, a couple of 10 pages in, I was like, called up my agent, and I'm like, so I'm writing, it's contemporary, it's teens, they're doing the things. And then all of a sudden, Phantom Pirate Ship shows up on the horizon, and it's see. And my agent was like, all right, I see where this is going. I'm like, I tried, man. I can't do it. I tried. I can't write contemporary. I just love it so much. It's like the fantasy piece of it is just so much fun. And writing fiction is just such a pleasure, such a joy. When I'm writing first drafts, I get out of my house, which is where I edit everybody else's work, in my office here. And I get out of my house, I make a day of it, I ha make it fun. Sometimes I write outside under a tree. I love being near water. I'll write at a pub somewhere that I'm just really happy. And it feels absolutely ridiculous that it's my job because it is such a great profession.
Nice. So it sounds like you've got a process that you like and you know works for you. And I always think that's one of the most important things you need to learn when you get into writing is how you work and understanding what you need to do to get the most out of the time, the writing time that you do have. So did it take you a while to sort of learn about your own writing preferences
My
and
goodness, so long, Richie. I don't know how long we have on this podcast today. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what led me to becoming a book coach and an editor in the first place was because it took me so long to learn. I mean, I like to say that my only skill, I mean, I did some really cool jobs and I've worked in every department in huge companies and in small companies. And if you look at my resume, it doesn't always make sense. But what you can see is I got promoted and I got promoted and I got promoted and there's progression and I moved within companies. And I would say, like, put me in the biggest mess. I don't care if that's in finance or products or marketing or sales or wherever. Wherever you need something figured out, that's where I like to be because I could figure out the big picture of it and get it going. But I like to say that my only skill and the reason I could move so fluidly and all these opportunities op opened up for me around the world that I got to work was because I can communicate. So my skill set was communication and being able to take a really complex idea and break it down into something that made sense to other people. And that's needed in business. It's also needed in writing. And the fact that I couldn't do that right away, you know, I thought I'd be instantly good at, a lot of us think this coming from a different industry. Oh, you know, I thought I'd be instantly good at writing books and I wasn't. And I had to, you know, really work at that. I thought I could just write down during nap time and write this book. And I knew that what was coming out on the page was not up to snuff with what I was writing, but I didn't know how to fix it. And so I spent, you know, years studying and trying to figure out what are those things. And I found it really frustrating in the writing community because many people were helpful, by the way. I didn't find I was expecting to get shut down and people were great. But it was a lot of, you're almost there. Keep going. You've got this.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And not a lot of, hey, specifically what you're doing is so cliche because it's actually the easiest way to set up a scene. Why don't you try this, right? Which is the way that I teach now. So I didn't get a lot of that. And I had to figure a lot of that out on my own just from trial and error and figuring out what, you know, getting 10 opinions and figuring out what's the common ground and what's going to fix this. And so I started putting together these little nuggets. And yeah, it took me a long time to figure out how to write, but I've got it now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do go into it with that attitude that you mentioned there, that you because they might be successful in something else. The do you think the skills translate? I mean, I was a lawyer and I could write legal stuff okay, but I soon realized that I couldn't really write fiction. And you do have to study and you have to learn, you have to put the hours in. And it you've got to be really patient because it does take time. And I always like to have the mindset that you can always write something better tomorrow than what you did today. And then that way you're always looking to get better and you're never satisfied. And I'm always scared of being satisfied because then I'll be complacent and that's like when I become a
Yeah,
book
I mean,
writer.
if you went back to my varied resume, I was always looking for that next challenge. And I think a decade into writing, I'm challenged each and every day. And I can think of a million things that I'd like to try in my next book to make it more complicated, to challenge myself to learn something new. I honestly don't think I get bored. Editing other people's work is such a gift to me because it's amazing. Like I read the like I need to give myself enough time. I'm actually very fast in terms of an editor. It's kind of a joke in my community because they're like, "Wow, Susie, like you are intense. You get a lot done." And part of that is also I really hate when I send things out and don't know when it's coming back. It's very anxiety inducing. And so I like to give a deadline and I need a deadline myself. But yeah, it's very complex. And, you know, no two manuscripts need, yes, there's lots of things that are common. And that's what I base my courses on is like, here's the, you know, the top 10 things that every writer comes to me needs to learn. You could find those in my courses, but when I do it personally, I take it very personally and I try to figure out, okay, well, in this case, this part of your book isn't working yet. Here's some suggestions. You don't have to take my suggestions, but here's three ways you could fix it. Let's talk about it and figure out which one of these or something completely different is going to fix it. But here's the problem. Here's why it's not going to land with readers. Here's, some suggestions to fix it. And then we work through those problems that way. And I don't think I'm ever going to get bored because every single book and everybody's brains work differently. And so it's an amazing challenge that I love.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so some people listening who may have heard of writing coaches, but they don't really understand what they do or what benefits they can offer. So do you mind telling, giving us like a sort of a bit of an overview of the role of a coach and the benefits that you've seen your students sort of reap as they've gone through the process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most people are more familiar with editing, and I do developmental editing as well, which is looking at the whole book and then providing suggestions or reacting, basically like a really, a really highly skilled beta reader who can't just tell you, that they did like something or didn't like something, but the whys, right? This didn't land because of this way that you've structured it, and this is why it's not working, and how to fix it. That's all the things in developmental editing. Coaching can work from the very beginning of the process, or it can come in at the end. Coaching, like, think of it as a personal trainer for your writing life. I mean, we can all buy a gym membership and go to the gym. We don't always know what to do when we get there. We're not always motivated to do it. Book coaching is a similar phenomenon. You could take my courses, but if you want that Cadillac experience and somebody to drive you every single day and to read everything that you write and to give that push and pull and to teach you in that one-on-one setting versus a group program, I've got lots of group programs. Then that's what a book coach does. So we do three things as that personal trainer for your writing life. There's motivation, right? Motivation and deadlines and that accountability and the project management. And so that you're not like, okay, well, when is this project, when is this book going to be done? It's like, okay, well, here's how you write and here's what's possible so that we have some deadlines that you can set to. But then also the writing craft. It's a one-on-one coach, and you can learn from the ground up what your particular style and how your voice is gonna be the best it can be on the page. And then the third thing is emotional support, because we have days, we all have days, and writing a book is not for the faint of heart. And sometimes all you need is to be able to tell somebody, hey, this week was really hard for these reasons. And I'm always there for that because we're humans again. I think writing is the closest thing that we can to sort of defining our humanity, and getting that down and sharing that with the world is scary.
And we do it alone, don't we? Most of the time, anyway. And I think when I've seen writers in our writing community, when they've got the confidence, gathered enough confidence to reach out and then start forming critique groups or doing beta read swaps and stuff like that, that's when you see them start to really get better. So I always feel like it is worthwhile working with other people when you feel ready to do that. But I think a lot of people, they may not feel comfortable working with other writers and feeling like they might feel too self-conscious, for example. So knowing that there's someone else out there, like an editor or a coach, who can really sort of give you that feedback that you need, I think that's really valuable. And it's worth knowing about because a lot of people, they don't even know that that kind of service is out there.
It's pretty new, honestly. A decade ago or 2 decades ago, this job didn't exist because this was something that publishing houses would take on. They, you could pitch them a promising story or send them a sample, and then agents or publishers would work with you to finish that. That isn't the case anymore. And a lot of times people will come to me and say, well, do I need to pay for a developmental edit because isn't my editor going to do that for me once I get a traditional contract? The truth is, you're not going to get a traditional contract these days unless you've already had it edited, right? Because they expect it to be as polished as can be, and they do not have the time to work with every writer and help them come along. So yeah, so it's a bit of a newer position, that fills that gap.
And like you say, it gives people structure and direction when they feel like they're lacking it. So I think it's a really good idea. I mean, what, oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I was at a conference this weekend and somebody said something and I'm still trying to work on it. But I'll test it out here with you. And it was something like, it is scary to share your writing. And as long as you haven't shared it, it's sort of in that limbo, like that limbo where writing limbo, where you think it might be good, but you don't know. And you're never going to know if you never share it, right? And it's like, I think of the Schrodinger's cat, right? Like the cat in the box. And as long as you don't open the box, you don't know if the cat is alive or dead, right? Like, and so they're kind of both things at once. And it's the same with your writing. If you're not, you know, if you can find great critique partners, amazing. You know, you don't necessarily have to pay for these things, but at the same time, I've also met many people who got ripped to shreds by a critique partner and didn't write for 10 years, right? So we've got to be careful about who we're sharing that with and who we're asking for help, because sometimes it's not a great situation, right? So there's a trust level as well. But yeah, if you never
Definitely.
share your writing, it might be brilliant, but it might not be. You're never going to know until you share it.
So when I read stories, one thing, well, the main thing that I'm drawn to is the characters. So I was wondering what advice you have for any writers out there who are looking to create lifelike characters, and what kind of mistakes that you've seen people make in regards to characters over the years.
Yeah. I mean, certainly. Okay. So we're kind of too, I could talk about this all day, Richie. I'm going to try to be succinct. With regards to characters, just know that in a novel length, I coach books. And so if you're writing short story or other things, this may not apply. But in a novel length book, you need a lot, right? You're going to spend a lot of time with this character. So pick somebody that you're fascinated by. Because if you pick something that you're not interested in, you're going to get very bored. You can do sort of a simpler character if you're doing a shorter story because you don't have time to delve into all the things. But definitely you want your characters to be flawed. But the number one advice that I would give people, and the number one thing that people I'm going to say get wrong, but or have struggle with, and even after we work on it, it's a really hard thing, is in a novel, what I see, and I said this earlier, you know, when with my own writing, some things become cliche, and they're not cliche because they're overdone or because you're copying it. They're cliche because they're the easiest thing or the most natural thing in the world, and all writers come to that same conclusion naturally if they haven't learned otherwise. And so it does get overdone, and that's why things become cliche. What happens with characters is oftentimes, especially in YA, but in other genres as well, and for adults, is we have a character, and when I ask them, you know, what they want in life, they want to do the right thing.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Is the answer, right? They want to do the right thing. And I've got to tell you that that might be true in real life, that we just want to do the right thing and we're altruistic and all those other things. It doesn't make for a good main character because it's boring, right? It's boring and it's cliche. If you just say that my character wants to do this thing, and save the world because it's the right thing to do, I got to tell you, nobody's gonna read that book. So if that's your answer, you got to dig deeper because you've got to figure out what is the deeply personal reason why your character will go above and beyond what any normal person would do in order to save the world, right? Or to do whatever it is that they want to do. And that's the number one issue that I see with their writing. Once you solve that and you give them a deeply personal reason, you know, if the world is at risk, they personally will die. Even framing it that way and say, I'm trying to save my own skin is way more interesting than just, I think it's the right thing to do. So challenge yourselves on that. If that's your answer, you got to dig deeper. It's not wrong and good for you that you want to save the world or that your character wants to, but I can tell you it is not enough to carry a book. It's boring.
How is your, is there any sort of ways or checks that you have to, that writers can use to see if a story is a little bit too dull or flat?
Dull or flat. Well, I mean, there's a million, yes. there's a million. But just keeping going on the character side, I think you just need to check in on their agency, right? So agency is the concept that they want something and they have a reason for it. So it's all kind of related. So if we know what their deeply personal reason is for wanting to go above and beyond what any normal person would do to get, you know, this thing done that they're trying to do, and we know what they want, all of a sudden that gives your character many, many things to do, right? And so these days we're writing much more, especially in genre fiction, in fantasy, we're writing much more from a deep perspective. And you want to color everything with your character's perspective, right? We're not some narrator pulled way back that you might have seen in books 30 years ago that's describing stuff from a 1,000-foot view or Spider-Man up on the wall looking down. We're a person moving through the world and we notice things that we will notice. Same thing is true for agency. If you know why they're doing, like if you know what they want in a scene, that gives them stuff to do, right? So that they're not just standing there observing what's happening. They're in there trying to get that done, whatever it is that they want. Right. And so if you've got that, then you'll find that you have lots of things, stuff for your characters to do. If they're doing nothing and they'd just be standing there, you've got an agency problem.
Sounds great. No, it's a brilliant way to sort of understand the character because, like you say, it's not just like one thing you've got to think about. You've got to think about all these different elements to make it all so convincing and engaging. Like you've got to basically make the reader believe that everything is that is happening is valid and justified, like you say. And it is hard to do with characters because people, like say, go down easy routes and they don't really delve deeper into what is moving that person emotionally. And that is like everything we do is emotional. Like we have emotional responses to everything. And it's only them sort of like extreme situations that drive us to do drastic things. And like you said there, you need to understand what that isn't within our characters. So yeah, great bit of advice.
Absolutely. And if you've made those, so two things can happen when I challenge a writer on this, if it's missing on the pages. Two things can happen, and that's where the coaching piece comes in, because it's not just me handing them a thing and saying that it's missing on the page. It's a dialogue between us saying, hey, like, what do you think? And sometimes the writer says, gosh, I hadn't thought of that. I need to think about it, right? And decide. But even more often, the writer can talk about it and say, well, they want this and they want that and they want this and they want that. And this is the whole thing. And they know, because many of us has been carrying around, you know, I like to ask writers, how long did it take you to write your first book? And the answer, I mean, once somebody said 3 weeks, but other than that, it's years and years and years, because we carry around these stories and you know all of that information, but maybe it didn't make it onto the page. And I can tell you, if it's not there, and you know the answer, it's pretty easy to fix. It's like a couple of sentences. It's not a rewrite, right? Like, I'm not like, go back and rewrite your story. It's like, hey, if you could just give them, instead of them standing around, maybe have them interacting and trying to steal something because they need this other thing, right? Like, give them something to do. It's way more interesting. But a lot of times, writers actually have those answers in their heads, and they didn't realize it wasn't on the page. Or they just didn't think it mattered, and it matters.
Does, yeah. Are there any other sorts of pitfalls that you see a lot of writers fall into?
Now Richie's like, let's keep going on this. What are the, oh my gosh. I mean,
What do you think
yeah,
the
there are
most
so
common
many.
one is?
What the most common one is, I mean, that's a big one. I think the other thing, I mean, I'm going to pull back 1,000 feet. I could go on all day. Like I said, I've got whole courses full of things that I see. When you work on 50 to 100 books a year, right, the patterns emerge and you start to see what everybody does. And it's not the fault of the writers. Like I said, usually those cliche things or those overdone things are not because they're copying, because actually those things don't ever make it into published fiction. So you might think you're completely original. What you don't realize is that it's like just the easiest way to do something. So for instance, I like to share, I've met, I mean, I'm friends with many agents as well, and some over wine, and they will share what their pet peeves are. And one of the things that you would have no way of knowing unless you had that conversation is that, opening a book with either a dream or somebody waking up is a pet peeve for people. Because again, it's not that you don't see it that often in published works because it doesn't make it into it. But it is the easiest way for a new writer who hasn't learned to manage the passage of time in their books to open a scene. It's like, well, their day starts when they wake up, so I'm going to show them waking up, and then their day ends with them falling asleep. Guarantee you that every single reader out there on the planet will assume that they woke up and will assume that they eventually sleep, because that's one of our downfalls as humans. And maybe it's like in a magic system, you need limits. In humanity, we have this limit where we need to actually sleep. And when we don't have sleep for times, then maybe that's a stressor. But in general, if you don't mention it, we know you woke up and we know you went to sleep. So cut those parts, please. There's lots of things like that where they're just the easiest way to set things up. And so if you've been reading manuscripts for a very long time, which I have, or if you're an agent or a publisher who reads many, many, many more manuscripts than I will ever read in my lifetime, I was at a recent conference where a few agents shared. One said 2,000 queries a year, one said 6,000, one said 8,000. So you can just see, like, 8,000 queries a year, that's more than 30 queries a day if you never take a day off and you read, 367 or 365 days a year. I don't know what fantasy universe has 367 days. See, I get to make things up. But yeah, it's a lot. Right. And so they start to see these patterns of what is the easiest, like where is the writer taking a shortcut? Where has the writer not pushed themselves? Where has the writer not learned yet how to get around that? Does that make sense? So there's some tells. Yeah.
That's a really good bit of advice, and it's people just think like I always say to those people is like, if you think of like a plot point or the next thing you could jump to, just stop and think about all the other ones as well. Don't just settle for that first one or the most convenient one. Like, think
Yes.
about something that's gonna have a bit more conflict in it or could make things a bit more difficult. And list as many as you can, and only then choose the next sort of route to take when you've got all the
Absolutely.
options
I
before you.
have an exercise that I do with newer writers, which is start the same scene three ways. And in some ways, it gives me like it makes me cringe to even think, because if somebody asked me to rewrite my scenes, I've had editors say, "Hey, why don't you just write this one from scratch again and see what happens?" I'm like, that does not feel productive. But I do this exercise with new writers to say, write the same scene three different ways, right? And this exercise actually comes from my mentor, Jenny Nash, from the CEO of Author Accelerator. So you need to give credit where credit is due, because it's her exercise that I just think is brilliant for newer writers. But it's write the same scene three different ways. And so you go into the scene and you write it, and it's timed. And then you maybe start the scene 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later, or change the setting or bring a different character in. And it's the same scene. And the whole idea is to stretch exactly what you just said, Richie, stretch the writer's brain so that they don't just settle on the first thing that comes to mind. Because I can tell you, it's not going to be the best one. It's probably going to be that cliche one. So you're telling the story, or even showing. I mean, I'm all about show don't tell, but you're maybe even showing the scene, but from the simplest perspective possible. So what else is possible, right? Where else can you move this? And to get your brain to think differently, especially when you're writing fiction, even if you're writing nonfiction, I work with a lot of memoir and nonfiction clients as well. You can still stretch yourself a little bit and try it from different perspectives and figure out what the best way, not the easiest way, not the fastest way. What's the best way, the most effective way to get your point across? And if you're making those decisions, your book is going to be so much more effective.
Great bit of advice as well. You mentioned show and tell there. That's also one that gets spoken a lot about in the writing world. So it's something that you're quite interested in, isn't it?
Well, actually, fascinated by it. And again, it, we all go back to our own origin story or backstory, and I won't bore you by going back to my childhood again. But yeah, show don't tell is one of the first pieces of advice that you sort of hear about, and people learn about not naming emotions, show your emotions. And I took those courses at university where they teach you that piece of it, but show don't tell is like a huge topic that I think is so fascinating because I'm fascinated by readers' brains. And my whole philosophy is, hey, how do you tell a story? I mean, it's kind of like bringing persuasive language or sales language into your book. Of course, you're not being salesy, but it's like, how do I get my idea that I'm so excited about? And how do I use words to make my reader excited about it? Also, and how do I use words the most effectively? And show don't tell is the most effective way to do that. And so, I mean, I can't get into all of it, but how do we, the whole idea behind it is, okay, I can tell you a story about what happened, but how do I make you feel like you're really there? How do I make you feel care about my characters? How do I interpret it for you and show you what it means to my character to have this thing happen, because it might be different than what I feel, right? For me, maybe missing a meal or something isn't so dire because I don't know if you were using the video for this or not, but I'm pretty well fed. Like I could probably miss a meal, I'd be okay. But for somebody in one of our fantasy stories, especially epic fantasy, when they're on this journey, maybe missing a meal means that they're not going to be tip top shape for their battle or something, right? So how do we show those things? How do we show what we want to share in the book without without glossing over the important parts? How do we make our reader experience it like they're there? How do we light up their brains? How do we make them, relate it to their own lives? All of those things. It's such a complex topic and so fascinating to me. Yes.
Yeah, it is a lot of psychology, and it's I really like that you brought that up because it really interests me how you create these images in people's minds and how writers take different approaches to do it, achieving it. And yeah, that's another reason
Yeah, and I
why
mean,
it's so interesting.
yeah. And you were asking, I mean, I'll keep on this theme of what do I see is the most common mistake. And I would say it's uncomfortable to do. You feel like you're being cheesy when you first are learning show don't tell techniques. It feels like it's overdone, like it's going to be whatever. And I can say to writers, I said, you know what? I will let you know when you're doing it too much, because there will come a day after I've worked with a writer for about 6 months, is like this magic number. All of a sudden, I get a scene. I'm like, you're showing too much, because it does happen. I mean, there's certainly a place for telling, and the idea is, how do which pieces of the book are important and which pieces aren't? You could show me that wake up scene in grave detail about, rubbing my eyes and fluttering my eyelids and moving around in the bed. But if you don't care about that scene, then you're kind of boring me by showing it. She woke up, or skipping that altogether is fine, right? So it's picking and choosing. But I will say that it takes a long time before a writer actually is doing it too much, but many writers, especially newer writers, think that they're doing it too much from off the get-go, and they think they're being too obvious about it. And I can tell you, you're probably not. You're probably not doing it too much, especially with magic. Let's bring it back to fantasy because I'm talking a lot about newer writers, but let's bring this back to fantasy. The biggest mistake that I see in fantasy, I mean, not all fantasy has magic, but much of it does, is making your magic or your paranormal or your whatever that is too small. So that I might think that it's just something normal that somebody's doing a hyperbole or exaggerating about. Make it big, make it weird. Whatever your magic is, make it huge. Give it a color, give it a sound. Like, how do we make it 3D? For whatever reason, a lot of times we have cerebral magic. I can read minds, or I can do this, or I can do that. And it kind of writers tend to be really quiet about it and just slip it in that she heard this thought in her head. Like, make it weird, make it big, slow it down. That's important. Show those pieces.
That's a really good bit of
Comments
advice,
on
yeah.
that?
I was actually talking with someone before about True Detective season one. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But I mean that's a pretty right, it's a brilliant story. But every now and then one of the main characters, Rust, he gets these all sorts of like magical psychedelic visions.
Yeah.
And it's not that's the extent of it in the story. There's nothing else magical or anything, and then you don't even know if it's like magic, for example. But it's enough to make you wonder. And for me, that's the beauty of magic, is that it's something to wonder about. And
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to give away the farm or explain it. No, that's not what I'm saying, but make it interesting.
Yeah,
Right.
make it
So, how they
curious.
portray that, if they just had him having a thought, if it was written like a thought, and then you're like, was that magic or was that not magic? But make it weird enough that you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't feel like real life. Right. Do they make it weird?
He's make
Is
it
it weird
weird,
enough to
yeah.
be intrigued? Do they make it weird enough to be intriguing in that situation?
Yeah. And like I say, I'm
Yeah.
talking about
Yeah.
it now.
Exactly, right? Because you're like, wow, I remembered that. Yeah. Yeah, don't be afraid. And the other thing I will say, I don't know why I'm on this tangent. Like I said, you asked me a question, I could talk all day. What else do I see, especially with respect to fantasy books, is we want to somewhere in the opening, even like one mistake, especially in YA fantasy, that I see writers do is, you have this kid or this teen with no magic. So the first half of the book is their boring life with no magic, and the second half of their book is the book like all the magic starts. You kind of, your opening chapters are a contract with your reader, and you're showing them what it's going to be like. So you don't have to give away the farm, but make sure that you're pulling forward in that opening scene. Something weird's got to happen to give us an idea that this isn't a boring contemporary world, that something's going to happen, because different readers like different things. And if you read half a book of somebody, going to prom and the football game, and then the other half of the book is them going to a Quidditch match or something else, right? You've broken that contract with your reader. They're two different books and it feels really disjointed. So make sure, even if you're not planning, even if your character doesn't know about magic yet, even if you're planning to introduce it later, and a lot of people say, but Susie, it's all in the second half. And I'm like, yeah, but you've got to kind of give us a hint, right? Give us a hint. Let
Foreshadow.
us know. Yeah, exactly. Foreshadow it. Perfect.
Yeah, I feel bad now saying that because in my novella, Together We Rise, magic only pops up at the very end. I mean, there's no mention of it at all. So, but it's a bit of a
No mention.
revelation that it does exist. It's like a new thing. So
Okay.
that's
Well,
how you can kind of explain me why I was
but
like.
it is set in a world. It's not exactly a secret. I've seen the covers for it and the blurbs for it. It's not exactly a secret that there's going to be something magical, or is it? It's not, right?
Yeah, well, in the fantasy world, anything can happen, so always expect the unexpected.
Anything can happen. Exactly.
Yeah,
Hey,
exactly.
you
Yeah.
know what? And I can hear the comments now, because people will say, hey, there's all these examples where what you're saying, Susie, is a great book, right? Like, they did what you say is incorrect, and it's a great book. And that's the thing, there are absolutely exceptions. But, when we're looking overall, and I'm sure that I'm sure that story is amazing. But when you look at it overall, you want to be doing things that give you the best chance to like make it the easiest for your reader to engage,
Yeah.
right? So the more things, you don't have to do everything that I say, certainly, and you can still have a very successful novel, short story, book, whatever you're writing, and not do these things. But if you break every rule and don't do any of them, you're going to end up, with a very confused reader and probably not what you think, which is a very intrigued reader, right? But certainly
Definitely.
you can break any one of these rules, Richie, and still be totally fine.
Yeah, we can be the anarchist. Susie, thank you very much. It's been lovely chatting with you. You've shared an awful lot of wisdom, and I've learned loads. So I'm sure our lovely listeners at home have learned a lot as well. If anyone would like to learn more about you, your writing, or your coaching, where's the best place for them to go?
Head to my website. It's all there at susievidori.com. It's got all my ongoing programs as well as my coaching programs.
Awesome. There'll be links in the description. But Susie, thank you very much again. Appreciate it very much. It's been
Have
a
an
fantastic
amazing
chat.
time, Richie. Thanks. Let's do this again soon.
Definitely, yeah. And thank you everyone at home for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the show.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.